Friends, the theme for this morning's message was going to be William Blake's famous poem, Little Lamb, Little Lamb, which we are actually going to sing later on in the service to the music of a Canadian composer whose name I cannot say. I think it's Winnegene Hatch. Thank you. We were going to do Little Lamb, Little Lamb, but as the news stories and videos and commentary poured out of Manchester, I decided that I just couldn't turn away. I thought this would be on your minds this week, and it was only the beginning, of course. Watching the coverage, I was reminded of the first few verses of the Book of Lamentations. Listen. How lonely sits the city that was once full of people. How like a widow she has become. She weeps bitterly in the night with tears on her cheeks. No one is near to comfort her, no one to restore her spirit. My children are destitute because the enemy has prevailed. I'm so sad. I think we all are. And that's why we sang a hymn of lament for the introit. Sometimes as much as we really, really want to be happy here, and that's good, but sometimes honesty has to win out, and we should also leave room for mourning. I was overwhelmed by the volume of coverage of the Manchester bombing. And I get it. Manchester feels like it might be a city next door, a Hamilton or a Detroit, a once industrial city just filled with people who are basically like us. But what really makes me sad this morning is that Manchester actually just scratches the surface. Manchester is every day. Everywhere, all the time. Besides the 22 or 3 people who died in the Manchester bombing this week, more than 600 other civilians died this week in terrorist attacks in India, Niger, Colombia, Mali, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Mexico, Somalia, the Philippines, Ukraine, Russia, Kenya, Thailand, and Nigeria, among other countries. Just this past Friday, we learned that more than 20, perhaps 25 Coptic Christians were killed by gunmen in Cairo. And in a massive tragedy that is actually intimately connected to the terrorism in Manchester, by the end of April this year, more than 1,000 refugees have drowned in the Mediterranean Sea, at least 200 of them children. 30, mostly toddlers, died just this week. These people were Christians. They were secular. They were Muslims. And all of them were fleeing poverty, violence, and chaos in their homelands. I am so sad. Now, I am not an expert on the geopolitical tensions and alliances and grudges and crises that fuel all this tragedy. We all know that ISIS is demonic, and we deplore ISIS. But if truth be told, we also know in our hearts that our Western nations have done things that have helped create the situation, that have helped create the world in which ISIS thrives. After World Wars I and II, we drew boundaries that would never work. We colonized these countries. It's called mercantilism. I learned that in grade school geography, that this was a good thing, but our mercantilism stripped these countries of their freedom and resources. rather than to let them develop their own institutions and trajectories. We meddled in their politics to give them rulers that they didn't want, or when they did get the ruler they wanted democratically, as in Iran or Chile or Nicaragua, we in the West sponsored coups to overthrow them. As much as Israel needed a homeland after World War II, and it did, we were also completely tone deaf to how our support of almost anything Israel did also created millions of refugees and unending occupation. And so on, and so on. The invasion of Iraq on grounds that turned out to be completely wrong has dropped that country into endless civil war and led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people and the creation of countless ISIS soldiers and terrorists. Our military solutions and our power politics over the past 100 years have left much of the Middle East a wasteland, and two whole continents full of refugees are on the move. I'm not an expert on the geopolitical situation, but I know this. What we have tried so far over the past 100 years has not worked. And recently, selling tanks and armored vehicles and fighter planes to all parties, and then usually calling it foreign aid, that hasn't worked either. Relying on Middle East oil, and as Canadians, it was in the news this week that the soldiers we trained for foreign militaries have tortured innocent civilians, arming first one faction, then another in Libya or Syria or Iraq. You know, none of this has brought us any closer to peace. None of this has made the world a safer place. And so we're sad, because I really believe that there isn't a person here in the church who doesn't want us to do the right thing and doesn't want the world to be a better place. So what would work? What's the answer? Well, judging by our progress so far, and most commentators, it doesn't seem like there's a clear-cut military solution. And as much as we think that perhaps we do need the military, at least to keep a lid on the worst, there's a powerful argument to be made that all this is just stirring the pot. What can we do from our living rooms, from our cottages, from our workplaces, from the parks next door? Are we completely powerless to make a difference? Perhaps not. We have, after all, the Sermon on the Mount. It is an interesting sermon in one respect that we often overlook. You see, the situation of the Jewish people to whom Jesus was preaching, who listened to the sermon, their situation was a lot like ours in one important respect. Most of the Jewish audience was powerless. They were powerless to change the geopolitical situation in which they lived. Random violence was a part of Jewish life in those days. Ruthless Rome occupied their homeland. Their leaders, the Jewish leaders, too often, not always, but too often simply collaborated with the Romans and paid little attention to the day-to-day needs of the people that they were charged with protecting. Like us, most Jewish people sat in their homes or gathered in their places of worship, powerless to really change the world. So Jesus told them, if they could not change the geopolitical situation, they could at least take charge of their own souls and their own neighborhoods and start there. Rome could not rule the souls of the people who sat down to listen to Jesus. Rome could not rule the day-to-day hopes and prayers and lives of the Jewish people. They could take charge of those things themselves, and like the mustard seed, by loving their neighbors, these Jewish people might grow to be something very good that transformed the world. In fact, said Jesus, if they did so, even if they were poor and weak, even if they were sad and mourned, if they nurtured that peaceable kingdom within themselves, if they sought peace where they were, they would be a blessing. You know, I'm actually reminded of a novel that I once taught when I was a high school teacher, a novel that is often found, it's a staple of university literature courses. Maybe you've read it too. Betty Smith's A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. Now, this is a novel about the violent, tragic lives of Irish immigrants that lived in the Brooklyn ghetto at the turn of the century. In this ghetto, there was a tree that was not wanted anywhere. But it grew. It grew and boarded up lots. It grew out of the poisoned earth. It grew through neglected garbage heaps. It even grew up through cracks in the cement. These trees, we have them here in Ontario too, maybe you've seen them, are called trees of heaven. And in the bleak gray on gray of the ghetto, only these trees managed to grow lushly. And yet, for all their beauty, the ghetto residents made war on the tree of heaven. They chopped those trees down and burned them to the root to try to get rid of them. Still, the trees of heaven can never be totally defeated, and they always grew back. The violence could not destroy them, and through their struggle to flourish, these trees of heaven declared an undying love for the poor people that they grew among. And they hopefully pointed to a future, more abundant life. In overcoming the violence directed their way, the trees of life waged peace. Could we as Christians, as we long for the peace that Jesus describes in the Sermon on the Mount and in the Beatitudes, do you think we as Christians could wage peace in our lives and thereby make sure that our lives point to a future of verdant life in our world like the trees of heaven did in the ghetto? How? Well, like those trees, we could bloom the way Jesus intends us to wherever we happen to be planted, which is here, but also in our families and communities. Blooming is a struggle, of course, because we're pulled this way and that by all sorts of busyness and priorities. But, for example, in spite of the stress of our jobs and the pressures of life and the whining of kids, we can make our homes an oasis of love, safe places of nurture and encouragement for our children who are at risk. We could nurture a new generation of peacemakers, which means that we as parents and grandparents ought not fly off the handle for no reason. It means that we have to exercise great self-control and unconditional love, but this is waging peace for the sake of the next generation. Or we can wage peace if we treat neighbors and friends and colleagues, the common people that God puts in our path every day, refugees like the Hurani family. We can treat them in a way that shoulders their burdens, and we do. Waging peace means taking risks too, which is harder, but speaking up about injustices at work, speaking up for God's beloved poor at town meetings, confronting and reporting sexual or physical or emotional violence wherever we suspect that it's happening, getting involved politically, we can choose careers that suit the gifts that we have to do good things for making shalom come. We can choose careers that make a difference for the better of the world, even if sometimes that's at the cost of some earthly success. I could go on, but you get the drift. In the end, it's like Frederick Buechner once put it, peace is not the absence of struggle. It is the presence of love. Peace is drawing evil towards ourselves so that the reconciliation Jesus taught us to strive for will flow into that black vacuum. Peace is being a tree of heaven in whatever are the ghettos of our time. Peace, like war, it has to be waged consciously, consistently, always. And for the sake of our own little lambs, there is no better place to start waging peace today than in our souls and on our home fronts. It is not a geopolitical solution. I've avoided telling you what our government should or should not do. But waging peace in our souls and on our home fronts is the only solution that we as individuals can start with. And doing so shines a light that might just show others, including those in power, the way. At least, that was Jesus' idea. Amen.